Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And this week's guest turned out to be quite a surprise in terms of the value that he offered and some of the insights. This is Fraser Merrifield, and he is the craft brewer of digital recruitment, the founder of Form Careers based up in Glasgow. And what I thought was going to be a conversation around creating an inbound business through LinkedIn and referrals and how he's made his business stand out in a really congested market of tech startups. Actually, the conversation really spun in terms of him being a working dad, how he thinks burnout is the biggest risk to recruiters, and why he thinks we're all working too hard and too long. You're in for a massive treat. And maybe we might even talk about craft beer. Who knows? So without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard-to-find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes. And for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And one of the greatest joys of being a podcast host is when I invite someone to come on, we think we're going to talk about one thing, and then once I get to know them before we start recording, I think, my God, my community needs to know about this individual. And this next guest is no exception. I've been following as a little bit of a secret stalker on LinkedIn, partly because of what he calls himself on LinkedIn, which we will talk about today. This is Fraser Merrifield, and he is the craft brewer of digital recruitment. He is the founder of Form Careers, and he's joining us today from, I don't know if it is sunny Glasgow, but welcome to you today, Fraser. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Very pleased of you to join us. So yeah, I've been following you avidly on LinkedIn for some time, but for those who are not yet familiar with who you are and what you do, give us a bit of an overview and an introduction.
Oh God, where do we start? So I'm digital recruitment. So I founded Form Careers middle of lockdown.
Wow.
So I run Form Careers. It is myself. It's individual at the moment out of choice. And I specialize in recruitment mainly in the kind of startup and scale up sectors. So I help build teams from the ground up.
How exciting.
What I do.
And what's that market been like? Obviously, we're recording this in quarter one of 2024. Just give us a little bit of a potted history. Since 2020, how has the startup market looking? Because that's a really, everybody seems to look at that avidly.
Up until last year, it was booming. Money was cheap. Interest rates were low. Everything was good. Yep. Huge investment in the startup scene. Once we hit the kind of last quarter of last year, the funding started to go. So it's a lot. It's a lot tighter now.
More challenging.
But there's still business there. You just have to be a little bit more active about going out and winning it. So
you do. And then this is like a preset to what we're going to probably talk about today, which is, you know, why. So just take us back a little step in terms of your own career journey then. So why did you launch in the middle of a pandemic? What happened?
I hated recruitment. Hated it.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Why?
Because I did 15 years of commercial corporate recruitment. And I did a long time working in real sweatshop, KPI, money,
Boiler room.
That boiler room recruitment, watching The Wolf of Wall Street, all this kind of thing. And I'm 41 now, I've got 3 kids. It got to the point at the end of my corporate, is it the end of my, it might not be the end of my corporate career, my pause on corporate recruitment, where I was getting to the point that it doesn't excite me anymore. I'm chasing feeds to put on the board, to do this whole recruitment thing. And I fell out of love with it. And I got to the point that I was like, I can't do this if I don't feel, I just don't get that buzz from it anymore. And I had, at the time, I had two kids. My third was born in lockdown, but I had 2 kids. And it got to the point that I was getting up in the morning, throwing some clothes on the kids. They were nursery at the time, and the nursery opened at 8 in the morning, and the only train that got me into town in time for work was at 8:13.
Oh my God.
So before
I'm already stressed.
So before I even started my day in recruitment, I had a 13-minute window to drop 2 kids off at 2 different parts of the
train. Oh no.
We got to the point that the train driver that took me into Glasgow paused the train for me and would wave me on.
Wow!
Yeah, we got to that point that he'd stop swearing at me out the window and laughing, and he was egging me on to make it to the train. And that just something had to give. Yeah. And then we hit lockdown, and literally the day we were sent away from the office, I said to my wife, I'm never going back. I said, if voluntary redundancy comes up, I'm going to grab it with both hands. And at that point, nothing was a risk anymore. I hadn't started the business that I'd been talking about for years because I've got kids, a mortgage, I've got expenses. What if it goes tits up? And then all of a sudden lockdown came and everything was a risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, everything was genuinely terrifying at the start of COVID. Anything could happen. And I was like, well, why not use this opportunity to take the risk that I've always...
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, once I started looking at it that way, I realized that there was no risk.
Because the biggest risk is not going for it. The biggest fear we have is the fear itself, right?
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, at the end of the day, all I had to do was keep a roof over my head and run a recruitment business, and I knew how to recruit. I've done it for years. I just wanted to do it a different way and do it the way that I'd always tried to do it with shackles on. And all
but
of a sudden,
you can do it exactly the way you want to do it.
And what's the worst that can happen? It goes tits up and I go and get another job. And all of a sudden,
well,
that didn't really seem. So that was how Form started.
That's, I love it.
That's the honest approach to how Form started. It was something I'd always wanted to do. And just, I was terrified.
It took a global pandemic for you to actually do it. Do you think, I mean, this is really hard to know without having a dystopian crystal ball or something. But if COVID hadn't happened, do you think at some point you would have made that decision anyway?
I don't think I'd be in recruitment.
Oh, you'd have left recruitment altogether.
I think I'd have left recruitment. I didn't really see. I was interviewing for other positions and I was interviewing with other companies and I was just like...
What I mean is, would you never have launched Form? Would Form careers never have come if it hadn't been for COVID?
I don't know. That was the catalyst. I don't know. I'd maybe have gone in and tried careers and I don't think I would have liked them. I don't think I would have felt as strongly about them. I don't think... I've done sales, I've done marketing, I've done all these things, and I think I'd have gone into it and thought, you know what, there's not the same.
It isn't where I want to be.
And I would probably have come back to it, but I think it could have delayed it some time, and it could have made it a lot harder to get back into that head.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so pleased that you're happy to share this with us, Fraser. And the reason that I am sort of really being diligent with making sure we understand your journey with it is because I think it will resonate with a lot of people. And I think COVID was this, you use the word catalyst, and I think it was. I mean, obviously it was a tragedy. It was a horrendous time in our human history. We all look back now on 2020, we've all got personal experience of what we actually all went through. But from a recruitment perspective, it was, you know, it was, we were annihilated. It was, but actually from that, I've seen and partnered and been proud to help launch startups, because like you say, there's literally, the advantage was that there was nothing to lose. So to hear it from somebody who's actually gone on that journey, and you know, you've made it sound like almost, well, what was there, you know, there was, the risk was not doing it, actually. That was the only risk.
There wasn't a risk. I was so ingrained in the day to day that my head was never out of, it was never out of work mode long enough to think there's really no risk here. I mean, all I had to do was keep a roof over my head. It's like, what, 4 or 5 deals in the year and that was you done? I mean, if
that's,
I couldn't
do that's that, your mortgage pay.
If I couldn't do that, I couldn't do it for anyone if I couldn't do it for myself.
So yeah, no. I love that.
Bigged it up into becoming this thing. So, and I think a lot of people, you look at again, I should say, COVID, horrible, everyone's got a different experience, but you look at what it's done to the workforce now. People don't have to be chained to the desk at 9 o'clock. People don't have to be doing the drop off and running to desk and feeling like they've run a marathon before they sit down.
I think that part of your testimony will, I mean, if there's any other empaths listening, I literally felt a tightening in my chest, because we've all been there pre-COVID where we all think we're doing the right thing. We think that, you know, we're trying to create these lifestyles, particularly if you are, you have a family or you've got whatever commitments or responsibilities. But actually what you're doing there is, those are the first signs of burnout, and nobody needs to be in an environment like that. I think actually, from my perspective, as I recruit for the recruitment industry, I think there are lots of companies that have reversed and mandated back in the office full time. So I think there'll be lots of recruiters listening thinking, screw this, I want some of what he's got. So
there's, you know, another recruitment doesn't have to be chained to a desk 60 hours a week. If anything, I've been 10 times as effective working massively compressed hours, but with a purpose.
Right. So go on. We were talking about this off camera and we hadn't sort of discussed this first. So this was something that really came out during our offline conversation. How have you managed to be as productive in a condensed week than when you were doing 60 hours a week? So what's your formula been?
Right. From my experience of recruitment works in ratios. Okay.
Yes.
You want an interview, you need 3 candidates.
Yes.
You want a placement, you need 3 candidates to interview. Mm-hmm. You want to land a job, you need 3 jobs. So that's to fill one placement, triple it by 3, triple it by 3, triple it by 3, for your 15 plus pieces of activity to fill that job. My candidate submitted to placement ratio last year was in the 90%.
Incredible.
I work with clients that I know that I can fill the work, partner with them. I find out everything I need to know. And by the time I submit a candidate, I know they've got the job. I know they're perfect for the role. And I eliminate all the noise, which means I don't have to do interview prep. I don't have to prep the client. I don't have to do feedback. I don't have to waste their time, my time, and the candidate's time with all these ratios. So my ratio is 1-to-1. If it's not 1-to-1, it's a fail. And I revisit it. If I send a candidate for a job and they don't get it, I failed.
That's incredible.
Because I then need to, then it now takes me double the amount, more than double the amount, because I need to redo the process and I need to wash up that process and go back to the drawing board and work out what's gone wrong. So actually, it probably triples the amount of work that's spent on that job.
Mm.
And when you're working in the startup, a lot of the startup and scale-up companies, they don't have time. They're not even recruiting.
Absolutely.
They can't do it themselves. They're recruiting me because they do not want to waste their time finding the right person and trawling through all the crap.
I mean, what you've just said there it'll be a revelation to a lot of people. Now, to somebody like me who considers herself traditional, old school, whatever you want to call me, in a good way, I was brought up on an appetite of ratios. All our targets, all our outcomes were based on ratios. So we worked, and I still to this day work on ratios, similar to you. So it's really nice to talk to somebody else that talks in that language. But you're not talking about...
From an early age in our careers, we were always trained that the ratio was 3-1. So if you wanted more activity, you had to increase the activity in the pipe.
Yeah.
Never did anyone sit down and say the ratio is 3-1. If you want to do more deals, you need to rip that up.
Yeah, of course you do.
No one did that. It was just, if you want to do it, you triple. Activity, which means time in front of a desk, in front of a computer, late nights, time kills deals.
And you're a busy fool. To me, that's what a quality approach actually means. It's about, and I think this will genuinely be a wake-up call for a lot of people listening, because you have it in your power. You can work out your ratios, whatever your desk is. You can work that out. And if you think that by, like you say, doubling up on sending candidates, like, yeah, I mean, of course you can double your chance of revenue, but instead of saying, well, I've got a 3-1 chance, let's get it down to 2-1. How do I get it down to a 1-1 chance? Which basically means you are guaranteed to place that job and that candidate.
So if you want to do, if I want to do 3 deals in a month, I need 3 jobs. So 3 jobs, 3 candidates.
Wow.
And in December, I got 3 new clients on board, 3 different skill sets. I'd worked with one of the clients before. The other 2 were brand new clients through referral. All 3 of them were placed. 3 candidates, 3 jobs, 3 clients, 3 skill sets, all done within 2 weeks.
Wow. That started off
as a really quiet month. That was I was winding down on a big project and it all landed at the same time. But that's last year. I had a couple of clients where the ratios were slightly off.
You're always going to get the skewer, but you can work out your average for the year.
A lot of the time when something doesn't land, you can actually say, shit, I missed that.
You're still learning, right?
It's not an exact science, but I'd rather be working in 80, 90% than working 33%. That's 66% failure.
Failure, right. It's true. And maybe this is where the recruitment sector is broken. And this is all doing it. I mean, you know, Fraser, I don't know if you want to reveal this, but give us a typical week in terms of how many hours you work now.
if you want warts or not, on Mondays, I've got my youngest, who's 3 years old.
Oh.
So he goes to the gym on a Monday and he does a couple of classes. And if I'm busy, I'll work. If not, I'll get a workout and then I'll drop him at the in-laws. So on a Monday, I'll do, by the time of all that, three hours on a Monday.
Yeah.
And then I'll wrap up in the evenings. Tuesday to Thursday, I work school hours. So nine to three, which I can also drop them off and pick them up.
Lovely.
My other ones,
no longer than 13-minute turnaround.
And Fridays I do 2 hours. Well, the youngest is at classes and then I spend the day with him.
Do your clients know this? Do you tell them this?
Oh, yeah.
Good, right. So why are we so fearful as an industry? Because of the toxic work culture that we seem to have as our reputation for working ridiculous hours. Why and how have you managed to establish yourself with the perfect scenario, which is this 1-in-1 ratio? What would your advice be to those recruiters listening that have the power to do this for themselves?
I think the biggest challenge that you've got is recruitment. If you look at you recruit recruiters, so one of the biggest things that we look for in an industry when we recruit recruiters is this ability to work through. The words come right out of my head now, but this
resilience, fortitude.
So we hire for resilience. And then your big corporate recruiters use that as a way of churning out numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see if a few of the big recruiters said, you've got a recruiter there, he's billing 120 grand a year consistently. He's happy, we're happy. Do we want to squeeze them and rinse them to get that 151?
Yeah.
Or do you want to sit down and have a conversation with them and say, are you happy at 120? If you are, brilliant. Why don't you try and do it more effectively?
Absolutely.
But recruitment as an industry is hired in resilience and it's hired in squeezing every last penny out of every last resource. But not every recruiter is doing that. Since I started up my business, I've actually had more help from other founders in the recruitment industry than I have anywhere else. Some of my biggest clients have come from referrals from the competition.
Fantastic.
See, when you actually get into that kind of startup and bespoke recruitment sector, you've got all these little 3, 4, 10-man bands who are doing it completely differently and doing it the way it should be done and all help each other.
Love it.
I'll not name names, but you've got these big global recruitment companies that were all brought and trained up in.
Yeah, the training
is impeccable. I mean, I couldn't do what I do now if I hadn't
if it wasn't for the training.
Blood, sweat, and tears and the intense training. And when I was 20, 25, starting in recruitment, I wanted to be on every blooming Ibiza holiday, and I wanted the nights out four nights a week, and I wanted to sleep on my desk and crawl out half drunk on a Thursday night and work through
Friday morning. Yeah,
you know, it was great. I mean, I look back at now and I think, what the fuck?
I know, but you did it. But that
it was great.
I'm pleased you brought this point up, because I think that there's been. I'm not saying anybody in our community or any of our listeners would be in this group of or this cohort of people. But what you've said there is that you've earned your stripes, you've learned your trade, you've done the tenure, you understand what you're doing, you're the expert in your field, and that has allowed you to create a business that works the way it does. But I think what there has been in terms of feedback for people that have joined the recruitment industry post-COVID boom is they think that from day one, they get to do it the way that you do it now. And that is the reality, that's not. It's not the reality, because you can't do it.
You need to spend a year or so hoovering up like a sponge, like any industry.
You do. You
need to down your stripes.
Absolutely.
But there's no reason, once you're starting to bring in some figures, that you can't look at doing it differently.
Absolutely.
You can go and work with, again, nameless big corporate. I'll not name anyone specifically.
No.
There's no reason you can't work within their confines and do it the way you want to do it, and say, do you know what? I don't need to work to a 3-to-1 ratio. Yeah. I don't need to work till 10 o'clock at night. I just have to
take
what they've taught me.
Work smart.
Put my own spin on it and work smarter and work efficiently. And if I'm billing 180 grand, they are not going to be sitting riding me because I haven't hit my KPIs. Or if they had, you can brush it off. You can do it differently until you're at the point that you can say, do you know what? I want to go and do it with an independent, or I want to do it myself, or I want to completely
rip
up what's been done. But you can still work smart within the confines of a KPI structure.
You can. And I mean, I did. I can name my corporate, because they actually became acquired. It was a company called Primetime back in the 90s. And it was mainly England-based. We had about 50 different offices. And I did become top biller. I was top biller out of the whole business for about 2 years on the trot. And I used to drive my leaders mad because I didn't conform to the whole smash and grab high quantity. I was right from probably my second quarter. I recognized that do I really need to interview 20 people in a week? Or how about if I just cherry pick the best ones and then I know I'll place them? That's always been to stay how I work now. I'm very candidate driven. So I think I'm glad I wasn't being obtuse asking you that question in that way, because I think it doesn't have to be a set period of time, but I think to become an expert and to become a master, or you know, masteress of your skill, I think you need to have got a proven track record. I think you need to have developed your knowledge.
I think you need that confidence.
And
you need to have failed. You need to say, I've done this.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. I've done this. It does work. Let's put all the efforts into not falling down that trap again, or that way of working doesn't work for me. So if it doesn't work for me, how are we going to do it differently? Mm-hmm. And there's ways to do that. But again, you do need to learn the trade.
You do. Recruitment by numbers works for some people. And I interview people who are lifers from the businesses that shall remain nameless. They're lifers. And you know what? They're some of the nicest people. I can't imagine working in those environments, but they've created a career for themselves. In terms of what you said there about learning from failures, I mean, that's a whole different podcast. And if actually you are a podcast listener, you should go and listen to How to Fail by Elizabeth Day. She's amazing. And it's all about how people learn from their fails. I need to ask you, because I should have asked you this in the intro, actually. So why do you call yourself the craft brewer?
Right, I was wondering if we get to it.
Where's the beer? Everybody wants to know where the beer is.
It started, a lot of people ask me what beer I make. It started as a joke.
Okay.
On LinkedIn, and someone was, we were having a chat. It was a conversation about, is a business ever truly unique? And there's nothing unique about recruitment. It's a service. We find CVs, we send CVs to companies, they hire the people or they don't hire them. It's a completely generic service that we provide. But within any generic product or service, there's different levels. And I like craft beer, and it came up, and it's like, I'd much rather be a craft beer than be a Bud or a Heineken or
Of course you would. Right.
Right, so there's loads of those kicking around, but I'd rather be a craft beer. And again, it comes down to it's lower volume, it's better quality ingredients, it's better output, and it sits within a smaller niche within the market. It doesn't try to appeal to everyone.
Yeah. I call myself Marmite. I have nearly
changed it because I got a referral on my LinkedIn end of last year where someone called me the Scylla Black of LinkedIn, and I fucking loved that.
The Scylla Black? What? I'm sorry, that's I'm LinkedIn. Not joining the dots. What do you mean?
What was it? The
Blind date.
Blind date. I was good at matching people.
Not surprise.
No, I was like the Scylla Black blind date of LinkedIn.
That's hilarious.
I kind of loved that, but then I realized that most people wouldn't have a fucking clue what I was talking about.
Well, I think that's possibly an age thing. I mean, Scylla Black was literally the queen of Saturday night TV for most people who were over the age of 40, probably. Yeah. So aging ourselves there. Oh, right.
But I love the effort that went into that as a recommendation rather than just the usual Fraser's a really nice recruiter. Done.
I love it. Silver it's okay. At the moment, I've called myself, somebody called me the godmother of Rector X. So at the moment, that is what is on my LinkedIn status.
Same thing.
I fancy myself as a bit of a Griselda. Sophia Vergara kind of version of the godmother, if you don't mind. No, that's really good. So I love the fact that you've made yourself stand out. So in terms of, you don't have to talk to us about your personal plans, but what's your advice to people who are looking to be just be more authentic in what can be, as you said, the word generic.
Be yourself.
Just be yourself.
Spent years conforming to corporate work and watering down who I am, and then all of a sudden when I started the business maybe you just hit an age that you just don't give a shit anymore, but I'm like,
yeah, I do think there's that.
I don't care. Even most of my business comes through, a lot of my clients come through writing on LinkedIn and the first thing I ever wrote on LinkedIn, all that was going through my head was, oh my god, my ex-colleagues are going to think I'm such a fanny, and then all of a sudden I was like, do I care?
Exactly.
90% of the people reading the stuff that I put out think, who the hell is this guy? Shit, as long as there's 10% there.
Absolutely.
Actually, there's value in this. So
I would say if one person reads it. And you've resonated with one person. Exactly.
So I think being yourself is just finding a balance. Be yourself. Be honest with yourself and who you are.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I work in tech, which makes it easy because I work with the most broadest spectrum of people under the
very
sun.
Very diverse.
It's hugely diverse. It's there's loads of geeks in there. There's loads of people with interests and hobbies. But I love that, and they all wear it on their sleeves. And I'm there I'm there coming from a sales environment, a recruitment environment where you're trying to.
I don't want that.
And you're like, oh god, no one wants that. So
nobody wants that.
Hard work to keep up and just be yourself.
I love it. What I love about you, and you've not even kind of worn this badge, but I know that you are wearing this badge, is that not enough people talk about the impact of sort of family life and trying to juggle everything on dads. I'm a working mum, and it gets, working mums we get talked about all the time, but actually working dads, it's a really challenging thing. So again, that one listener who is maybe feeling a little bit isolated, that he's a bit scared to go and talk to his leader or to, say, look, actually, I need a bit more flexibility. I'm finding it really hard. I'm not seeing my child at night time. I'm getting home. I'm exhausted. What would your advice be to him?
Oh, but speak about it. Honestly, approach the deal with the situation. I've literally, it is a route to burnout if you don't find this balance. And they're only young ones.
And no, they are.
I think it's worse for dads because it's an unwritten rule that even in the recruitment industry, in any industry, if you're a working mom, you can go up to your manager and you can say, I've got to do school runs, I've got to do X, Y, and Z, I need to go flexible in my hours. As a dad, you do that. People go, well, where's your wife? Or why are you?
It's the polar opposite. It's toxic masculinity. And I think, obviously it's enshrined in law now that we have the right to flexible working as parents or anybody that requires it.
Yeah, but there's lots of things that are in law that absolutely are not in practice.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's impossible to fight if you don't you're never going to get anywhere if you don't actually approach it. The reason I need the flex, my wife's in the police. So she works in the courts and does all that. So she's quite rigid in her hours. Flexible. Even they're more flexible than they used to be. But it's much harder for her to flex her job than it is for
me. Of course it is. Yeah, because she's working shift.
At desk at 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
I was having this conversation recently with a business manager about the fact that there should be no companies out there scheduling meetings for 9 a.m. Because if you schedule a meeting for 9 a.m., you're going to end up with a workforce that have either just come through rush hour traffic, have just had to drop off their kids, they've just had to work through that problem that happened last night. There's no reason for anything to need to start at 9 a.m.
9 o'clock.
Start at 10 o'clock.
When people absolutely.
Got to their desk, had a coffee, dealt with whatever they have to deal with in their personal lives, and you'll not only get everyone there and not exclude people, because there's tons of people that you'll exclude. It's not just parents. But you'll also get people aware and interested and engaged and not worrying about what's sitting on their computer from last night or the fact they haven't.
I agree.
So
that's never been mentioned before, but I actually think that worldwide that should be a thing. I mean, I probably was a bit more guilty of it when we were really in the Zoom era of COVID, where I would literally block out my diary all day, and I became very Zoom fatigued. But now, back in the real world, since 2021, I do not schedule any meeting before 10 a.m. I don't want interviews. I don't want external interviews to be arranged before 10 a.m. because too much can go wrong. You know, that's when, like you say, that's when you're dealing with shit from the night before. You maybe have been to the gym. You know, whatever it might be.
I'd rather be meeting at 9 o'clock at night than 9 o'clock in the morning. 9 o'clock at night is actually a great time for me.
Oh. I'm in my pajamas by 9 o'clock at night because I'm up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym.
I'd probably just do it in the pajamas and have it that way. But I'd rather have it in the evening when I've dealt with all my shit.
Yeah.
My kids go to bed. My kids are like 8 and under, so
they're little.
So I put them to bed. I'll quite often come up to the office out of choice, and if I get hours that I need to make up, I'll come up here. I'll grab a drink. I'll sit down. I'll chill out, and I'll work through admin, day planning.
Yeah.
Anything that I need to work through, conversations with other people who are tied up during the day. Even look at the candidate recruitment works 9 till 6 is the general, or 8 till 6 is the general.
Yeah.
But everyone's fucking busy.
I know. I agree with you. No,
evenings to have a chat when they're not at work and not having to hide in the blooming in the stairwell having a conversation with you that their manager might not hear. You're much better having that conversation at 7 at night when everyone's chilled out.
But that's it, isn't it? No, I love that. That might very well be the name of this podcast. Oh, Fraser, you've been so delightful to get to know. And I'm hoping that other people will start to follow your content as well. And who knows, maybe at some point you might actually start making beer, because it sounds like if you did, it would probably be really delicious. Although, can you do an alcohol-free version? Thank you very much for me. Thank you so much for joining us on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. It's been a joy. We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in Keybridge IT. Keybridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, Keybridge IT Solutions is a London-based, fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know Keybridge IT. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy.
Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customer's day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society, and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell. You have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent, but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.